Welcome to Wellness Unplugged, where we disconnect the fake glitz of social media and get real about creating that transformation you've been wanting for far too long. You'll hear real and raw conversations with experts in nutrition, fitness, health, and psychology. We're not here to dish the latest overpriced supplement, miracle cure, or fad diet. There's enough shows like that. We're all about science. This is a journey to be walked one step at a time. We'll get healthier together by simplifying nutrition, building on our previous successes, and changing habits, behaviors, and mindset just a little bit every day. So, if you're ready to confront your challenges head on and get back to feeling like you're in control of your life again, then you're in the right place. Now, your host of Wellness Unplugged, down over 100 pounds, and is still on a mission to help you leave BS diets in the rearview mirror forever, Coach John McLernan.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Wellness Unplugged. I've got a very special guest today, which I think every guest is special, actually, but I feel like it needs to be announced that I do have a special guest today from the same city that I live in, which is kind of unusual. We don't often have podcast guests in our own city. But Nikki is a remarkable woman that I've had the pleasure of getting to know over the last, 4 or 5 years, I think. But it was probably maybe not even a year ago when you started telling your story, and all of a sudden it was like, I realized, oh my gosh, Nikki is more than just a rock star mortgage broker. Like, I got to know more of your story that I think is really, really powerful and very, very humanizing in a sense, in the best possible way. Nikki's gone through a lot of grief very recently. And because of that, it was really one small thing that we're going to dive into that helped her to be able to move forward from some devastating incidences in her life. So with that, welcome, Nikki. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan. I'm excited, a little nervous for the conversation, but I'm ready.
Yeah. So, maybe we can just touch on, we'll sort of dive into it as the conversation flows, but you had two particular losses in your life that really were, I think why I want to talk about it is I think we suck at grief. Basically, we're not very good at grief. And so kind of what were the two losses that you suffered, and where did that take you? And there was something that helped you to kind of start moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We really do suck at grief. I think it's something we aren't taught how to handle. Yeah. We aren't taught what it's going to feel like or anything like that. So the two losses that I faced, I lost my mom in 2019 to dementia. So it was a difficult loss leading up to the loss, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And then my brother passed away in December 2020, very suddenly. He fell and hit his head and died of a hematoma. And losing my mom and I were extremely close. She just always had my back. It was me and my mom all the time. Yeah. And so when she first got diagnosed, I was going through divorce, and then she got diagnosed, and then the dementia took her quite quickly. So I had time to process it, but I was still grieving the loss of her as a person each day. I wasn't ready for the loss of her completely. Yeah. So when she died, it was a shock as well. Even the doctors were like, we weren't expecting her to go. We're sorry. She had kind of turned a corner and was doing better. So shocking. And then my brother, with my mom, I did go to a dark place that I'd never been before because I'd never experienced that level of grief. And I stayed there longer than I like to admit. And I started kind of coming out of it and realizing that I had to get back to living for my daughter and for me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, COVID hit. And then with my brother passing, I really went to a dark place. He passed away December 1st, and we went into lockdown again, I think December 7th or December 8th. So it was Christmas. His birthday was December 26th. It was the month of December 2020 was not a great month for me.
Yeah.
I'm also self-employed. So if I don't work, there becomes the financial stress. To say I went to a dark place is almost an understatement, to be honest.
And I kind of wanted to dive into that a little bit. What it looks like for you, and first of all, like, thank you for sharing, because this is not easy things to share. You know, we look at, like, time has passed. We'll see, like, you know, this composed woman in front of us, and you know, you're doing wonderfully well. But sometimes we can see that, and we misunderstand that there. You know, there's still difficult day-to-day struggles navigating this. And I think you would probably agree that grief never really leaves you in a sense. It's always there. It comes and goes in waves. And you just kind of have to accept it in a very human way as a part of life. If you feel comfortable sharing, for you, what did a dark place look like? What did it feel like?
It was dark. The thoughts that I had, I didn't know my brain could go there. I didn't want to keep living my life without them. I had thoughts of not knowing how to live without them, not wanting to live without them. Really good friends were saying, well, you've got your daughter, you need to live for her. And it just didn't register. I didn't know who I was without my mom and then without my brother. And you mentioned the word waves, and that's how I've always described my grief. Is in the beginning, it was tidal waves. Like, it was one after the other. And I was in that impact zone where you can't even come up for air before the next wave hits you. And I was drowning. Like, there is no question about it. I was drowning. And as time goes on, you get a break between the waves. The waves don't get smaller for me. I just get more time between them. And I was talking about this with someone last week, and like you said, I come across as so put together. And when people say that, I actually laugh, because I tell them, you know what? I still cry every day. It might be 5 seconds. It might be an hour. I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know what's going to set me off. It could be happy tears now, because it's almost been a year.
Yeah.
But there's still tears every day. And the grief just never goes away. So for me, that dark place was not knowing how to pull myself out of it. For the first time in my life, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to make myself feel better. I didn't know how to get out of bed some days.
Yeah, that is a really powerful thing to express. And again, you know, I might find myself saying this a few times. I appreciate you being open and sharing that, but because I think in sharing some of these things, others who might be experiencing something like this realize that, one, they're not alone, and two, it's okay to be human. You know, I think sometimes we feel this pressure that we have to present a certain persona or a certain image to be accepted, or we're kind of afraid of the messy, the ugly, the dark parts of life, the parts of being human that don't necessarily make it onto social media. And yet, because I think also what you'd have is you'd have special people in your life, close friends and family, who would also not know what to do. Did you experience any kind of shame or a sense of guilt around struggling with these thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. And I felt so broken. Like, what was wrong with me that I couldn't pick myself up, that I couldn't pull myself out of this dark place? Why couldn't I do that when I'm not the only person in the world that's lost someone? And why is this hitting me so much harder? And why? And I got so angry. I was angry at the world for taking them from me. I was angry at myself because I wasn't handling it well. I was angry at the people around me that tried to make me feel better, because the things that they said were just not things I was in a place to hear. And now when people say those things to me, I'm in a place to hear them. But a year ago, it just felt like it almost took me to a darker place for someone to say, but you're strong, you can do this. Because in those moments, I was not strong and I didn't know if I could do it. So being told I could do something that not one part of me felt I could do just added to the disconnect with myself.
Yeah, which is a really interesting thing, because we want to, I think it's this natural impulse when someone's in pain and suffering, we want to say things like, it's going to be okay. We want to comfort ourselves with those words. But sometimes it doesn't really feel like that. And it's I don't know, the proverbial trying to polish a turd, for lack of a better analogy, in the present moment, right? Like, it's like life can be really dark and crappy, and to try to polish it rather than just acknowledge it. And so what would you, for someone who maybe is an observer to another person experiencing deep grief, what would you say to that person? Like, how might you suggest that they communicate rather than just maybe saying platitudes that don't resonate?
I think one of the big things I've learned is that we can have compassion and empathy for someone without understanding what they're feeling. And so lots of times when someone's going through a grief that maybe you don't understand, we throw these, it's okay, it's going to be okay. And logically, the person grieving, like, I knew somewhere inside of me that it was going to be okay. Somewhere. I mean, there were moments I wasn't sure, but I think deep down I knew that, yes, I would. Let me go back. So losing my brother, I knew that more so than with my mom, because I learned with my mom that it's awful and it hurts and the pain is so real, but I did get through it. So that kind of kept me going a bit with my brother, even in those really dark places, was wait, I do know how to do this. It's not my first time here. I can do this, but it took me a bit to get there. So again, just we can understand and have empathy and or we can have compassion and empathy without understanding. So if you know someone grieving and you don't understand, sometimes all you have to say or do is, I'm here. I will sit with you. I will talk with you. I will listen to you talk about your loved ones, whatever you need. And we hear that all the time. Whatever you need, I'm here. Just reach out. I kind of think that the person that's grieving doesn't want to be a burden, right? Because their emotions are so heavy. It's so hard to put that on someone else. So if you know someone, the best thing that anyone has done for me at difficult points in my life is just sat beside me, whether it's in silence, whether it's while I cried, whether it was going for a walk. They just gave me space, but were still there with me.
Yeah. Physically present wherever possible. There's something about human connection. And I would add that, because I've been through trauma as well in kind of a different sense, and people don't know what to say. And sometimes they feel really, and that actually makes people want to withdraw because like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to say. I don't want to make it worse. So I'm just going to hide out and withdraw. And, I just wanted to say to people, you don't have to fix this. This isn't your, once you let go of this feeling that this is something you need to fix for someone else, because you can't, then you can kind of just be and witness, be a witness really to them and they're struggling, and just be with them and say, look, I'm human. You're human. I'm together with you in this. And, Leon here, he says, Nikki, you've not listed your divorce as a stress point. Is that important? That's a really interesting question because there is this element in your story as well. You have quite a few things in your story that we might get to. Where in your history did that take place? Relative, you said 2019 and 2020, you lost your mom, your brother. Was that a sort of adding to the burden that you were carrying?
Absolutely. I separated in 2015, divorce going through 2016, 2017. My mom was diagnosed 2016. So 2016, I was dealing with the divorce and everything that goes along with that.
Stigma.
Yes. Well, the stigma and the grief, right? I didn't know when I went into my divorce that there was a level of grief that I would experience in that. And again, looking back, all of these experiences have taught me so much about grief and taught me so much about how I handle stress and grief. My divorce, even though it was necessary, for lack of a better word, I needed that divorce to move forward in my life. There was definitely an element of grief, definitely an element of guilt and shame and anger and all of the same feelings that you feel when you lose someone. Because essentially I did. I lost the future that we had said we were going to build together. And my daughter, it affected her. So I was walking, she was three. It was not so easy. It's still not so easy with her. She still says she wishes mom and dad were together and she's nine now. So these things don't go away. We just learn how to handle them better, I think. So yes, the divorce is definitely a big part of my story.
Yeah. And maybe I could ask this question. It might be a tricky one to answer, but would you remove these experiences from your life if you could?
Oof. If you would have asked me that 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years, any day before today or the last few months, the answer would be absolutely not. What I have learned is invaluable. The person that I am today is someone that I think for the first time in my life, I understand and accept and love. And that's, I wouldn't have been able to say that before. And it's really hard to get to a place where I know that, my daughter got hurt in my divorce, people got hurt in my divorce, losing my mom, losing my brother, to say that, it's such a tricky one because I can't change them. Would I do anything to have my mom and brother back? Yes. Would I still be the same person I am today if they hadn't died? No. So there's just not on one hand, it's an easy answer in saying, well, I wouldn't change anything because I wouldn't be the person I am today. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, what I wouldn't do to have my mom and my brother back.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. And I know that's a really, really tough question to answer, but I think you answered beautifully. Just this, and why I ask that question, because people might wonder why ask such a hard question. Part of sharing these stories is to give people hope in the most difficult and dark human experiences that we go through. We're kind of, I think, for there's a fear of that we're somehow not strong enough to go through these experiences. And I know, again, I often reference my own story because, you know, I can find some common ground in that. I you know, was a binge eating food addict. That was one of my ways of coping. And it was, I think, rooted in this fear that I'm not strong enough to process the emotions I'm going to feel if I stop binge eating. You know, what did you use kind of as a, maybe as a coping mechanism in those dark places, or what sort of helped you keep functioning in a sense?
Well, before I answer that, so you mentioned the food as kind of your way. I have a different way of punishing myself. I that's how I used to view it, or I still view it. I didn't know it at the time, but like I would make choices that fully punished myself because things weren't whatever it was that I was upset about or grieving or hurt. I would just punish myself. So if I wasn't handling my grief well, I would make bad choices to punish myself for that. Which is really obviously not healthy. But what I did, and I know I'm kind of all over the place here, but I will get to your question, I promise.
No, this is important. I love it. Go ahead.
After my brother, so it was January, and I kind of was starting to take stock of where I was at and how scary it actually was. And so I made it through Christmas. And then I just realized, like, I can't do this anymore. I can't stay in this place. I don't know what to do. And I started researching grief support groups. And I couldn't find, like, nothing was resonating. Nothing was clicking. Nothing was feeling right. And I was getting really frustrated because why aren't people talking about this? Why aren't people sharing their stories? Why aren't we helping each other through these really, really difficult things? And of course, it's COVID, so it's not like I could join an in-person support group. So I was only looking online. So it was a real struggle. And during that struggle, I came across gratitude and grief. And again, the timing has to be right for this, because any other moment and I would have said some really bad words and been like, don't talk to me about gratitude during my grief. Yeah. But in that moment, I kind of went, okay, what's the gratitude in this? What is there? And I started researching that. And that's when things kind of shifted a bit. And I came across just kind of this realization within myself, instead of punishing myself, what is one thing I can do right now that makes me feel good? Yeah. And it was the simplest, probably silliest thing, but I drink a green powdered drink. I would always drink it in the morning. And that was what I decided I was going to do, was every morning I was going to make myself my green powder drink again. And if that's all I did for myself that day, by that time, I mean, I was out of bed. I was, you know, I was I was functioning somewhat. I was functioning the way I had to get my daughter to school or whatever she needed from me. And that was really the extent of it. So I started drinking my green drink. And after a bit, I was kind of like, okay, well, now I'm doing that every day. What can I add on? And I started working out in my basement. And I started just, you know, and then I got to build and add on to that. And all these things just kept building until all of a sudden I kind of woke up one day and went, wait, I feel good.
Yeah. And You have an episode on your podcast, Life as Our Labels, and it was titled My Little Green Drink. And that's one of my favorite episodes that you published. I listened to that more than once because I was like, this is really powerful and remarkable. And I wanted to get to that point in the story. I wanted people to hear that because you found like one small thing and it became like a little mini anchor to you that, okay, I'm just going to do this one thing today. And you didn't put any other pressure on yourself. It was like, if I do that, that's enough. And, you know, I speak a lot with my clients about things like setting what I call CMGs or can't miss goals. And so it's setting something that a target that's so simple and so achievable, you basically can't miss it even on a really, really difficult day.
Yeah. And I do still have bad days. I mean, it can be a song that sets me off. It can be my mom's birthday. It could be anything. Big or small. And I might skip my little green drink for a couple days and I can just feel myself doing this. And then it's like, wait, okay, back I go, start with my little green drink and just do that every day.
Yeah. It becomes Well, there's a term called like habit stacking. And so for me, it was brushing my teeth. Brushing my teeth was an act of self-care. And so I made sure that every morning that I did that. And then it became hydration. So I'd brush my teeth. And then I drank, you know, like 500 mils of water, or I don't know how many ounces that is for American viewers, but half a liter of water, a pint, maybe, is that?
No idea.
but it was these little steps. And then, you know, like now what it's evolved into is like I got up in the morning, I'll brush my teeth and you know, I brush, I floss, and I have like this whole sort of oral hygiene routine. I don't want to go down the sidebar of oral hygiene and heart health, but there's a deeper connection to that. But then I'll go downstairs and I hop on my recumbent bike and I go for a ride. And it one thing sort of stacks into another. And then after that, I have a cold shower, which seems like a crazy thing to do. But it's kind of a part of it. For me, it's about making myself deliberately uncomfortable and being willing to experience that discomfort and then being able to breathe through it and say, I can handle it. And so, but you mentioned something, and that was like self punishment. If you don't mind me asking, how did you kind of punish yourself in a sense? Because I have very intimate experience with like self-loathing and self-punishment. So what was that like for you?
It could be something like not eating enough in a day. So okay. The opposite of you, I would literally starve. Mm-hmm. And it felt awful. And it took me a really long time to realize that what the triggers were and when I was doing this and that's when I just kind of went, wow, like I'm actually punishing myself. And so drinking, not hydrating enough. So I'm like you, I drink a lot of water in the morning. I drink water throughout the day. It kind of fits with my little green drink. Staying hydrated is really important for me. If I don't, I get a headache. I feel sluggish, like all of the things. And so I don't drink enough water. I either don't eat or I just eat really bad. And when you're used to eating healthy and you're used to taking care of yourself in a certain way and you take away that for a day or a week, depending, I mean, now I know when I'm doing it, but before I didn't. So sometimes it would last longer than a day and you just spiral.
Yeah. It's so interesting. What one negative trigger can do and lead us into and what one positive trigger can lead us into, because I think sometimes we might look at, let's say your little green drink, for example, and go, that's such a small thing. How could it do anything? But what it represents is a bigger shift in your mindset, in your brain, in your perspective on life today. And that triggers this cascade of potential positive effects versus negative effects. And so we've got another question here that came in from Leon. Nikki, are you at a place where you understand if your apathy versus empathy has been impacted? And I should just let you know, Leon is a very, very insightful, intelligent gentleman who I've had the pleasure of communicating with a couple of times. And this is why he's asking such phenomenal questions. So apathy versus empathy.
I like to say yes. I do believe that I am. I think that, again, something I've learned through all of this loss, the empathy that I feel, it can be triggered a commercial, a TV show. Like I was saying to someone, I was watching Lucifer the other day, and I don't know if anyone knows or watches Lucifer. He's the devil. It's not exactly a show that is meant to trigger certain emotions in people. And I was ugly crying just because it just hit home, that particular storyline. So I think for me, the empathy piece is almost too big at times. I think there's been times where I couldn't handle anything that anybody else was going through. And so maybe that was the apathy part. If I'm understanding the question right, maybe I'm not. Mm-hmm. There was a time that I didn't have empathy for anyone, not even for myself. Like I literally just was like, this is my wall. This is my bubble. Don't come near me. I can't handle anything. And now I think I maybe have gone a little bit too far on the empathy side. And I'm hoping that soon I'll kind of find my way where not everything turns me into a blubbering mess.
Yeah. But this, again, this is the beautiful part of being human. Without our emotions, we aren't human, we're robots. And so, and here's the other thing, we don't really choose our emotions. They show up, and I like to call them like our dashboard indicator lights or our check engine light. It tells us that something is just needing our attention. And I think apathy is really like a protective self-defense mechanism. It's a way that we go, I don't have the capacity to process these big emotions right now. And so apathy is one of the things we turn to. Other things might be like alcohol, or for me, it was food. These are ways to avoidance type behaviors or suppression type behaviors where we turn away from those things. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I used alcohol. Like, I drank my way through my divorce. There's no question about it. Okay, go ahead.
No. And I love the honesty. Because again, I know that you're like this extremely capable woman and extremely, you know, qualified and capable professional who's quite successful. And so to hear that, again, it just really highlights sort of the humanity of it, right? And alcohol was a coping mechanism. It was a way of like not feeling everything you wanted to feel because you had so many, you got a young daughter at that time. So your daughter was three. Like, that's a pretty demanding. I mean, I think every age is kind of demanding, but as children get older, they get a little bit less dependent, a little more independent. So that was really demanding sort of professional career while having all of this kind of heaped on you. It's like, yeah, that was a way out. And I think you're able to share that without shame as well. Which I think is really, really important. Like, that was the tool that you had at that time. And I like to say to people, look, we do the best we can with the tools we currently have. And yes, sometimes the tools are not the best. You know, we look at smoking. I think smoking is a terrible long-term behavior with many terrible long-term ramifications. And if you look at somebody who smokes, most people who smoke will say, I want to quit. I'll quit tomorrow because today it solves a problem.
Yep.
And it was like, you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to stop this behavior, but today I don't have any other tool. So you've kind of been equipped with some tools, and I think it's probably safe to say that you haven't navigated this alone. So who has been instrumental in helping you navigate some of these difficult experiences?
I have two girlfriends, that maybe three, we'll say three. And I used to laugh when I was going through my divorce, because they all, and they still represent something different for me in terms of what I'm going through or how I support them or how they support me. So one of them was my angry friend. So if I was pissed off at my ex or he, right, I would call her and she would just be like, blah. And I'd be like, thank you. I needed someone to be angry for me. Or I had my super sympathetic friend that was just like, oh, you know what? You're going to be fine. You can do this. Like, super just supportive and sympathetic. Yeah. And yeah. And then I had my friend that she literally would listen to me cry. We wouldn't even talk. She would just be on the other end of the phone and I would just cry and be like, how is this my life right now? How did I get to this point? What do I do? And she never told me it was going to be okay. She never told me I could do it. She was never angry. She was just there.
Yeah.
And that support got me through my divorce. It got me through, my mom and everything that happened there. And there's a lot with my brother as well. I mean, you know, I say he fell and hit his head and died of a hematoma, and that is how he died. But there is a lot more to that story leading up to it. And after that has made things really difficult as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think because some people might also feel like I have to be, you know, something's wrong with me if I'm not strong enough to do this myself. And I think that's like, isolation is probably the worst thing we can do to ourselves, is to disconnect ourselves from other human beings. And our brain plays this awful trick where you touched on this earlier. I'm such a burden. Nobody's going to want to be around me.
And yeah, we isolate. Like, I'm a social, like, I need people. And I just, with my mom, not so much. With my mom, I relied very heavily on my friends. With my brother, I didn't. Like, that, I think that's what scared me too, is I got really angry at one of those support people, and I yelled at her, and the things that I said to her, we just started talking again a month ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I was so angry and so awful to her. And I mean, she had a lot going on in her life as well. She was losing her dad. She had health problems. And at one point I actually got mad at her for not letting me be there for her. Like, that's how angry I was. I'm like, how dare you not let me be there for you? How dare you?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that, again, like, that's like the messy human experience. And then, but you look at these relationships and you think, like, ultimately, like, they've been tried in the fire, so to speak, right? They've been, you know, and so you'll look back and say these relationships have been made much stronger by these difficult experiences. And I like to say that, like, I've never met a remarkable person who had an easy life. And I think that's one of the reasons why I see you as quite a remarkable person, not because you're somehow this fearless, you know, model of perfection, but because but because you're just this wonderful struggling human who's sharing your story to help other people see and recognize that, like, you know, this is hard and it's really heavy and it's really dark, but it's not impossible. And you're allowed to be, you know, because I think here's another thing. And maybe you can touch on this. You're extremely intelligent and capable and quite successful professionally. Sometimes we would look at that and go, why can't I do this in this other area of my life? Why don't these skills translate over? And I wonder if that's been your experience.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. So, you know, I talked about my friends being my support group. I have also done a fair amount of therapy between 2015 and now. So I have spent my money, I've put in my time, and that's a huge part of my journey. And one of the therapists that I had, she was amazing. And she said to me one day, because I was really struggling with the personal Nikki that was this mess and the business Nikki that could still kick ass. And how am I these two different people? And she looked at me and she said, you know what? It's okay to be business Nikki in certain parts of your personal life if that's what you need to do in that moment. So let business Nikki cross over and let her help you through those difficult moments. And that was, you know, an aha moment, I believe, as Oprah says. Like, that was just one of those moments where I went, oh, you mean I can be that person in my personal life, and I can just be direct with people and say, this is what I need. This isn't helping. Right. And just say what I need in this really direct way, the way I handle my business. And it's really been a positive thing.
Yeah. And you mentioned therapy, and I wish that we would normalize therapy and see it as not just like a nice sort of bonus, but a really like crucial aspect to overall human health and mental health. So I really would like to not see therapy treated as this thing that you go to when you have a big problem. Like, we don't go to the gym when we get injured. We go to the gym to maintain our health, or we exercise, whether it's going to the gym or not. We exercise to maintain our health, not we wait until we have a crisis and then decide we just start exercising. And so I think I would love to see the same thing with therapy. And you mentioned having a really great therapist, and I'm curious, have you ever had a not so great therapist? And because sometimes I think there's just people that are not a match.
I have had therapists that I didn't stick with, which would mean we weren't a great match, but I have learned something from, so I've had three traditional therapists, and I've had three more coach style therapy. So the three traditional, the first one, and you're right, we need to go before we have these big moments in our lives. I had gone before, but my divorce was the first big one. And so I went to see someone, and the first thing he said to me is, you need to take the word should out of your vocabulary. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, you just said you should have left sooner. You didn't. You could have, but you didn't. So let that go and focus on now you did, and this is where you're at. And so the word should has really shifted for me since that one appointment. I had the one talked about letting business Nikki come out in other areas of my life is perfectly okay. So there's definitely, everyone has taught me a tool, something that I can apply and teach my daughter.
Yeah, which is really, really important. And you touch on business, Nikki. And I think in general, this is a bit of shifting gears slightly, but being female, being strong, being capable, being assertive, it's got to be a challenging road to navigate, especially I believe you work in a predominantly male dominated industry in the mortgage broker business. So to be assertive will get read as one of two ways, or maybe more than two ways, but like typically... I won't define your experience for you. I'll let you share.
I've definitely had some interesting experiences in my industry and in business in general. So whether it's been at networking events or business type networking things, I mean, the typical talked over by men, cut off by men, being told, well, just talk louder. Why do I have to talk louder to be heard? Why isn't what I have to say enough? Why do I have to present it in a way that you accept it? And definitely as soon as I challenge anything back, to use one of my words, I get labeled. And it used to really, really bother me. And it still does. It doesn't bother me so much for me anymore because I'm used to it. I can handle it. I've come to terms, for lack of a better way of putting it, right? I know who I am. I know what I bring to the table. And if someone doesn't want to listen to me or cuts me off or anything, that's on them, not on me type thing. I will always call them out for it, but it's for my daughter, right? I want her to have a voice from day one, and I want her to be comfortable using her voice, and I want her to be heard. And I think if anything, that would be my biggest thing, is I have been told by people in my industry more than once that, oh, there's plenty of brokers doing a lot more volume than you, and they don't have the same needs as you. And my response is, okay, well, who? And they're all men, and they're all married, and they all have stay-at-home wives. And I'm like, okay, that is not a fair comparison. If I say I need technology to help me in my business, that's because I'm a single mom running a business on my own. I need this. And then I've had the flip side where I've had lots of amazing male colleagues say, I couldn't do what you do because you're doing it all. And my wife is cooking and cleaning and going grocery shopping and doing all of that. And you're doing it all. So I get both sides of it. And it's interesting. That should be a compliment, you know, hey, you're doing it all. I couldn't do that. But it doesn't always feel like one.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I'm really glad you highlighted the other side of it too, because as you know, I'm an advocate for positive masculinity. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, it is the negative behavior that gets highlighted. And it should be, to a degree, it should be acknowledged and highlighted. Like, this is, you know, not acceptable or not appropriate behavior. But on the same token, if that's all that men hear, where is something sort of being held up for us to aspire to? So when we hear about the other side, it's like, no, there's actually good men out there too.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of them.
Yeah. And so, I'm just keeping an eye on the clock here. I think you have some other experiences that'd be really valuable to talk about. And, but I'll maybe want to save them for another conversation. I think I'd like to bring you back onto one of our, Friday afternoon calls, if we can make that work, or we talk about this, because I have two powerful, like, strong female co-hosts that I work with. We call ourselves Dispellers of Darkness. that's where my name here, Sir John the Legendary, comes from. We've all given ourselves like funny names. It's kind of just a play on words, but I think that'd be a really interesting conversation. And so kind of to tie things together from this conversation, what have you learned about grief kind of going through these very, very difficult experiences?
There's no one way to do it. And like I said, we are not taught. I talked about it in one of my podcasts where, love my mom, she did not teach me how to grieve. She lost her mom and her dad and her brother. I was 13 when she lost her mom. And then I was 20 when she lost her dad. And then like 22, 23 when she lost her brother. So all before I was 25. So she was relatively young. And I didn't see her grieve. And her and my dad got divorced. I didn't see her grieve or struggle or anything through any of those experiences. She was always strong. And I used to admire her so much for her strength. And I still do. I still do. But I wish she would have taught me a little bit more that it's okay to not always be put together. It's okay to share and show that I'm not perfect. So I think that would be it. Like, it's okay for your grief to be messy. There's no set time frame on how long you're going to be in that really messy place. You will come out the other side. You're always going to have your moments, but you will come out the other side.
Yeah. And through all of this, you know, you've talked about self-growth. What's one thing that you really powerful thing that you've learned about yourself?
How important it is to like myself, accept myself. Honestly, yeah. I think that's it. Allowing myself permission to not be perfect.
Yeah. That is so important, because we have this pressure often poured on us by societal expectations that we should match up to some kind of ideal, which is like never going to be the case. And so because we've been really diving into grief, what would you say to someone that is grieving or going through something really difficult? What is like one thing they can do right now to start down the road to healing?
Pick that one thing. I don't care how small it is. You know, again, mine was putting some green powder in water and stirring it and drinking it. That's how simple it was. So pick that one thing, whether it's brushing your teeth. What is it for you? What makes you feel like you're taking care of you, like you matter, like you're going to be okay in that moment that you're doing that? And it doesn't have to be big. It can be the smallest thing.
Yeah, I love that. So We're going to wrap this up today, but I wanted to once again say thank you so much, Nikki, for being incredibly vulnerable and real and human and raw in sharing your story. I think you might agree that this is even part of the ongoing healing process, being able to share some of this, being human and connecting with other people, letting other people know this is the reality of the human experience. And it is messy, it is ugly, it is difficult, but underneath it all, like, we do have the ability to get through it, even though many days we might not feel like it. So thank you so much for so openly sharing your story. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan.
Yeah. And I just dropped in the comments for anybody who would like to connect with Nikki. I think she's got a fabulous podcast called Life is Our Labels. You can connect with her on Facebook or also link.linktree, which is what link. I'm not going to spell it out. It's on the ticker.
I'll put it in the comments. Tough one.
But well worth listening. Nikki has so much wisdom to share. I know that I've valued listening to her conversations on her podcast, and she has a wonderful job of sharing her story. So
thanks for listening to Wellness Unplugged, where we disconnect the fake glitz of social media and get real about creating that transformation you've been wanting for far too long. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show now so you're first to hear new episodes with more motivating conversations with health experts to help you take the next step on your journey of transformation. If you can't wait until then, sign up for Coach John's free Crush Your Cravings Guide to reduce nighttime snacking, eating because you're bored, and emotional eating. Get it now at freedomnutrition.rocks/crushyourcravings.